Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the thrice weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show today. Oregon is the home of America's oldest youth orchestra, the Portland Youth Philharmonic, founded, they claim, in 1924. But what many people don't know is that the Youth Philharmonic isn't really from Portland, and it didn't really start in 1924. It was actually founded in 1912 in the town of Burns, a place so far away from the obvious trappings of, quote, culture, as to almost qualify as a howling wilderness at that time. The important thing to know is that Portland and Burns were as different in 1910 as they are today, but in very different ways. Portland was a rough-hewn, up-and-coming metropolis, still commonly called Stumptown, with the roughest and most dangerous waterfront on the West Coast and a tremendous amount of trade going on, and a, quote, better class of well-mannered citizens who wore nice clothes and appreciated culture. From far away, you might have thought it was a logical place for a youth orchestra to arise. But appearances deceive. Although no longer a colony per se, Portland was like a colonial city. The elements of culture were assumed to come from somewhere else, New York, London, Paris, whatever, and possession of or appreciation for those elements was a mark of status. But Burns was in the middle of a homesteading boom. A new law had opened up 320-acre patches of the high desert to settlers who would like to come and claim a piece and prove it up by living on it for 5 years. So Burns was full of people who actually came from those revered, quote, culture places, who flocked to the wilderness to create a community for themselves. And they sure weren't going to create a community in which the best things culture had to offer were reserved only for the swells. Like other immigrants before them, they were out to create a utopia of sorts, and they sure didn't want their children growing up with no culture. Put simply, Burns was hungry for culture, felt a need for it. Portland was, for the most part, happy with the culture it had. That's why it makes perfect sense that the Portland Youth Philharmonic got started in Burns, Oregon, a town in the desert with a three-digit population, a day's bone-jarring wagon trail ride from the nearest railroad terminal. The spark that brought those homesteaders' hunger for culture together with into the nation's first youth symphony was a woman named Mary Dodge. Dodge was, by anyone's standard, an extraordinary person. She was a classically trained violinist, an extremely good one. But what was unusual about her was that her talent was linked with a love of children and, more importantly, a deeply democratic view about making music. The idea that a countywide population of a couple thousand wouldn't have a big enough critical mass of genius musicians to form a symphony would have made her laugh. Music was, she felt, a gift to humanity, and anyone could and should get good enough at it to bask in it and the happiness it brought. In other words, for all her talents as a musician, her skills and philosophy as a teacher were what really made her extraordinary. Dodge came to Burns when her husband, bass player Mott Dodge, got a job in Harney County. They arrived at their new home in 1910. When they got there, Mary Dodge naturally started playing her violin. The town's children found this fascinating, and soon Dodge had a flock of them learning to play in an old photography school which she had taken over. She was joined by her husband, who was able to teach kids to read notes on the bass clef, and by a homesteader who happened to be a professional flautist from Italy, who taught the wind instruments and conducted. By 1912, they had put together an orchestra, which they called the Sagebrush Symphony Orchestra, consisting of 30 to 35 disciplined, skilled musicians, many of them still under 4 feet tall. Well, by 1915, the Sagebrush Symphony was the pride of Harney County, and they were touring eastern Oregon on a Chautauqua circuit. The town of Burns was totally energized, and residents raised funds to send them to the state fair in 1916. Now, Burns still had nothing but wagon trails connecting it with the outside world, so the trip to Salem was a real adventure for the kids. One player counted 14 flat tires on the way from Burns to Bend. The car arrived on its rims, but it got there. The kids played 7 concerts at the state fair and then headed north to Portland for a week as the toast of the city. The JCs got cars to take the young musicians on tours of the area, showing them the newly built Columbia River Highway, Council Crest, and other local attractions. And of course, there were several performances. Portland was utterly enchanted. The kids couldn't know it, but it was their finest hour. It wouldn't happen again. The U.S. was already in the process of getting directly involved in World War I, which shifted everyone's attention off the symphony and onto grimmer things. Then, in 1918, Mott Dodge was transferred to Portland, and he and Mary left Burns. Mary had taught her students well. The Sagebrush Symphony Orchestra soldiered on without her for a while, although it never again reached the same levels of acclaim. But some of her students moved with her to Portland, where she opened her own violin school and, with their help, built another youth symphony, the Portland Junior Symphony Orchestra. Successful though the orchestra was, there was one more thing that Dodge had to do before her creation would be ready for the true international success that was to come. Find a conductor. So when a professionally trained Russian conductor named Jacques Gershkovich came to Portland to guest conduct the Portland Symphony, she talked him into taking over as junior symphony conductor. Although at first he protested that he didn't teach children, after hearing them play, he said in his thick Russian accent, "I take." And he remained with them until 1953. Gershkovich came in 1923 and conducted the group's first performance in 1924, and it's that date that people use mostly to mark the origin of the symphony, as if it didn't exist until a real conductor showed up to take over. Certainly this marks the moment the symphony moved up into the big leagues, but using 1924 as its date of origin is a bit of a slap in the face for the people who did the really hard work and beat very long odds to get to that point, especially Mary Dodge. But it was Gershkovich who catapulted the symphony to international fame. Under his baton and that of his successors, the group has performed all over the world, and in the early 1930s was regularly broadcast on nationwide network radio. It's been the model for dozens, perhaps hundreds, of youth symphonies in cities all over the U.S. Its name was changed to Portland Youth Philharmonic in 1978. And it all came out of a tiny, dusty town in the wilderness of eastern Oregon, with the help of a woman who was probably the best music teacher in Oregon history. This article was first published on August 21st of 2011, under the headline, First Youth Symphony in U.S. Came Out of Oregon's High Desert. Key sources included works by Nadine Gelsing, Jacob Abshalimov, and Russell Donald. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do or just want to say hi? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Or ping me on Twitter at @OffbeatOregon, or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Also, do let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and an inclination to talk about Oregon history. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way around 6 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. So if you're looking forward to the next one, well, you haven't got long to wait. Until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.